You are listening to Digging In Podcast, presented by Rooted Wealth Advisors.
Welcome back into another episode of the Digging In Podcast. I'm your host, Kincho Kelly, helping you get those questions answered to and through retirement. Today, once again, I find myself with the tax wizard extraordinaire down in Champaign, John Severino. What's up, man?
Oh, man, living the dream. Can't wait to dig in. I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
You lie so hard, man. Always good to come down here and see you, though. It's one of the unique challenges that we have as a team, kind of being spread out. I can't wait to go see Connor in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Get out to the Rockies and go see him. But always good to come down here in Bloomington and Champaign and see you guys.
Yeah, in all seriousness, love having you. So appreciate you being here.
And you roll out the red carpet when I come to town.
We try.
So that's nice. So I don't know if you saw in the first season of Digging In, at the very end we did a rapid fire session with Zach. We had accumulated these random questions from events and people emailing them in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I've got a few left over.
All right.
So will you humor me game show style?
Okay.
We will just kind of go rapid fire through these questions.
Rapid fire. You know I'm going to ramble on every time.
I know. That's why we need to we'll have Phil set the timer.
There we go.
And we'll just rattle through some of these. And they're all over the map, man.
Okay.
There's really no method to the madness. But you're the man with the plan. So I'm hoping you can provide at least some kind of guidance. And we'll have the big disclaimer up front before we get started.
Please.
Your financial situation is completely unique to you. This is not financial advice for your specific situation in any way, shape, or form. Just some good, maybe financial literacy. How's that?
I second that. Not financial advice.
That's right. Compliance should have no problem.
No, it should clear.
All right, man.
Let's do it.
Lump sum pensions.
Yeah.
Should I take it or should I wait?
Lump sum pension, of course, it's going to be situational based, right? So, there's a lot of things to consider there. Ultimately, do know, like from a 40,000 foot view, your other option besides a lump sum, from a pension plan is to what we consider annuitize the contract or the lump sum pension. So what you're doing is you're trading in this lump sum amount for a fixed monthly stream of income, typically for the rest of your life. And you can also elect, for your spouse's lifetime or another lifetime there. I tell you what, right now, most lump sums have probably gone down significantly in the last two and a half years. And just to kind of keep things simple and not ramble on, it's due to segmented rates. Segmented rates do impact the amount of your lump sum pension, and they are inverse, your lump sum pension amount is going to have an inverse relationship with Fed funds interest rate. So as an example, as interest rates have gone up the last couple years since COVID to help slow the economy down, lump sum pensions have actually dropped. To take that example one step further, I sat down with a prospective couple, that their lump sum dropped, or his particular lump sum dropped by over 30% in literally 12-month period of time.
Yikes.
Due to interest rates going up. So just make sure you're aware of that if you're kind of in this retirement red zone. But I can't stress the situational, base of that question or how to answer that question. Because typically it's going to be, how much cash flow do you need in retirement and how much of other assets do you have?
Okay.
Short and sweet.
Yeah, right? You understood the idea of rapid fire. What's John Savarino's favorite food?
My least favorite food's cheese. Favorite food, steak.
Why did you answer least favorite food first?
Because it gave me an extra 10 seconds to figure out what my favorite was.
Okay. All right. Steak is always a solid one to go with. I hear about this 5-year rule on Roth conversions.
Yeah.
Walk me through what that is.
Okay. So the 5-year rule is simply if I do a Roth conversion, for anyone that doesn't know what a Roth conversion is, I highly recommend looking up Talking Money with John Savarino and watching the video on Roth conversions.
Link below.
Now, Roth conversion, 5-year rule. Any amount that you convert to a Roth, so it'd be from a traditional IRA to your Roth IRA, your growth is subject to a 5-year rule. And what I mean by that is you cannot pull the growth out until it's been in there for 5 years. One of the biggest misconceptions out there when it comes to this 5-year rule is that your principal, the amount that you converted, is also subject to the 5-year rule. That is incorrect. Your principal is always liquid starting the next day. Mm-hmm. So once again, 5-year rule applies on the growth of the Roth conversion, has to stay in there for a 5-year period. After the 5 years is up, you can pull the whole thing tax-free.
And principal is not covered.
Correct.
It does not.
Okay. 5-year rule only applies to growth in the Roth.
Okay. What is John Savarino's biggest pet peeve?
Biggest pet peeve? Lack of self-awareness.
Lack of self-awareness.
Yep.
Man, I thought it was going to be people that put cheese on everything.
No, I mean, hey, it's each their own. I'm not here to judge. Just don't force me to eat it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, people that aren't self-aware drive me nuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we can leave it there. That's the broadest sense.
That's right. That's right. We're not going to take it any further.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Should I pay off my mortgage or should I invest more?
Another situationally, right. I think I'm going to answer this actually pretty rapid fire. I did a video, one of my first videos of Talking Money was like, when do I start saving for mm-hmm. retirement? If you have a low interest rate or low mortgage rate, typically not paying it off early makes the most sense because you're, especially in this environment, with let me give an example real quick. Like right now, you can find risk-free guarantees of 5%. Like I could put $10,000 and get 5% guaranteed for at least the next 6 months, and I rarely say guarantee. And if my mortgage is only costing me 3%, you are netting out a positive 2%. In that example, don't pay the mortgage off.
That's good. And the inverse would probably be true because interest rates have been higher
exactly.
the last, 18 months?
Yep.
So if you're walking around with a 7% interest rate on your mortgage, probably the inverse would be true of that analogy you just used.
Typically, we'd want to pay that down a little bit faster at a 7% rate, just because the guarantees aren't going to be, you know, as competitive with that.
Yeah.
But it is as simple as what can I get guaranteed? What's it costing me? And then balancing the two. And even if you have other debt, right? If one debt's costing you more than another, it's going to be more advantageous to pay the one that's costing more.
There you go. It's a very tricky situation because mortgage rates are all over the place and you might have locked in one 10 years ago.
Right.
Or you could have just gotten one. And so that varies greatly. Situations are situational. Compliance is going to love how many disclaimers we're putting inside of this.
They're going to love that. We're in a very interesting time.
Yeah, to say the least. What kind of race car do you drive, and what's the fastest you've ever gone?
So the chassis is a 1997 Spitzer Altered Dragster chassis. It's got a 436 small block Chevy in it. It's got the best of the best of everything. Fastest I've ever been in a quarter mile, I'll be 170 mile an hour, close to it. In elapsed time, it was 7.8 seconds.
There you go. You got a picture we can put on the screen for people to see you driving
somewhere,
this car?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. What made you want to drive cars?
My father. My father, you know, actually, he bought this car brand new, Bear chassis in 1997. I would have been 3 years old. My dad had always been racing, just other types of racing. Mm-hmm. Love you, Dad. So he bought this car. My dad built it himself. So ultimately, my love for cars, my love for racing specifically, definitely ran through my dad and just growing up around it. And, actually being able to do it, I mean, there's no better feeling.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. Just keep it on the speed limit when you're driving on normal roads.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest 401k mistakes you see people make?
Actually goes back to one of the videos I did, you know, previously, is just not having the right beneficiaries or not checking the beneficiaries. Like, I know that sounds absolutely foundational. Double check your beneficiaries, right? Especially if you've been divorced, separated, lost someone that you love. Going back to those beneficiaries could cost, you know, your family, your legacy, a ton of money. You know, I think the one other kind of mistake that people make is not asking for help with their investments. Typically, you know, maybe the company themselves are offering a tool, always cookie cutter, right? It has to be scalable to the company. So it's not going to be, in my opinion, the best way for most people. So just ask for help.
What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
When I was in like freshman year, I wanted to be a police officer. And then I think a couple years later, I wanted to do what my dad did, which was a heavy machinery mechanic. And then I realized they made decent money, but then like my dad had multiple knee surgeries, a shoulder surgery. I thought, I don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool. What is a fiduciary?
A fiduciary is ultimately an oath by law that you are required to always be acting on your client's best interest. It can never be in your best interest, someone else's best interest. Whatever decision that you make with regard to a client has to be in their best interest by law.
What's John Severino's dream car?
Dream car, McLaren 720.
Oh, why? The rarity of the McLarens?
Or? It's really not even that rare. I mean, it's rare in terms of cost. if you ever heard one start, you'll know. It is the coolest sounding car in the world, in my opinion.
Just based on start sound alone.
Well, I mean, there's more to it. But that's what separates it from any other hypercar or supercar, in my opinion, is the sound of a McLaren 720 engine.
Okay. All right. I should have known. I should have done more research before I asked the car guy a car question. Yeah.
Daily driver dream car, just because I've been thinking about it, would never do it, but would be a Mercedes E63 AMG. Don't even make them anymore, but that would be another dream. Like, that would be a dream daily driver.
Okay. All right. And the McLaren would just be for tracks?
I'd take that thing out of the air.
I don't think you're leaving it in the economy lot at the park at the airport, though.
It would not be a garage queen. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. You're going to put some miles on it. That's right. All right. That sounds good. When should I take Social Security if I don't need it?
If you don't need it, well, there's one huge question that no one can ever answer. It's, when are we going to die? If we knew that, it'd be such an easy one to answer. Situational based as well. If you don't need it, if you're still working and you're eligible to take it, but you're not at full retirement age, probably more times than not going to make sense to take it, due to some penalties that could apply there. Once you get to full retirement age, which for most of you watching is going to be 67, typically that 60 to 70 range, it's really hard to say, quite frankly. It's really going to depend on longevity at that point. That's my opinion. Typically, you know, the advice that we're giving our clients, if there's a concern of longevity, typically we'd like to take it a little bit sooner.
Sounds good. We talk a lot about Roth conversions in our office.
Yeah.
Is there a scenario where you shouldn't do a Roth conversion?
Yeah, I mean, there are actually. Right now I'm trying to register, you know, a recent scenario where we didn't advise a conversion. I think a really easy answer, short and sweet, is if you don't have a lot of assets. And that's not a dig or anything of that nature. Anytime you do a Roth conversion, 9 times out of 10, you have to pay taxes on their conversion. Believe it or not, there are some times that you don't have to pay taxes, which is always fun to walk someone through. Most of the time you are going to pay taxes, and that upfront bite due to taxation, it actually would cost that, you know, that person a longevity of their funds. If you have enough there and it's going to impact you, you know, tax-wise in a big way in the future, typically it would make sense. But for those with a lesser amount of assets or tax-deferred assets that they need in a short period of time, typically wouldn't make sense.
Sounds good. Last question I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is John Severino so excited about taxes?
Why am I so excited about taxes? That's a great question. I think just the more that I've been involved in the business, you know, the more strategies that we've been able to implement for clients, and then just to start to see some of the impact that that's made, or it's lessened, I guess, in terms of taxes, like, just gets me going. Like, I love it so much. I think it's cool because in a legal way, like, mm-hmm. nothing of what we do is even borderline. It's all legal. And the fact that you can use that to our clients' advantage and help them save money in taxes and put that money to work, I don't know, like, it just gets me going. It really does. I think it's the coolest thing ever.
I was explaining our team to somebody the other day and how our advisors are really cool when they come together for the investment committee because they all have a different like point of emphasis in different areas. And so it's like your plan gets looked at by, of course, multiple financial advisors, but they all have a different lens in which they're viewing it. And I always try and use the analogy for you. I'm like, and John, he's just like a little kid at Christmas when a new tax code comes out. He's just waiting to go downstairs and unwrap it. He just can't wait to dive into it.
Yeah.
And I think that's so cool because like I said when I was talking with Andrew, because he has such a heart for like the numbers and the data and wants to really research it. And it's like, we need people like you that love diving into the tax portion, because most people are like, taxes? No thanks. I'll do anything else but read the tax code. And you're like, nope, that's for me.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what makes our team, our firm unique. It's what I appreciate you about you, mm-hmm. Is you're like, taxes? You got a tax question? Bring it on.
Absolutely.
So thanks for helping me out with my rapid fire questions, man.
I enjoyed it.
We'll work on the speediness of some of those answers. I mean, we're not all doing 170.
I need yes or no's.
Down the racetrack. That'll do it for this episode of Digging In. If you want to follow up with John, any of the questions we covered today, he'd be more than happy to help you with a follow-up. Call today. The number is 815-918-4727. And until next time, keep digging in.
This was Digging In Podcast, presented by Rooted Wealth Advisors.